Welcome back to another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Paff and Reggie Rizzou coming at you. Today on the show, an excavation in France produces a mansion of yesteryear, or yester-century is more like it. Goats? Yes, goats have overrun a small Italian island and the locals are not thrilled. And on this day in history, the tire that changed the automobile. That's all coming up on Cool Stuff. In France, the remains of a well-preserved medieval castle have been unearthed in the city of Vannes at the foot of a private hotel. The excavation began in February of last year in preparation for the construction of the city's new Museum of Fine Arts. Per GNM, the first phase of the project took place in the existing hotel's cellars and courtyard, which was originally a private mansion built at the end of the 18th century. So the excavation team wasn't totally shocked to come upon this old building. The owners knew a medieval structure existed beneath the Hotel La Gorge, but the scope and preservation of the structure itself was a surprise, a massive surprise, in fact, to those involved. The hotel's courtyard was originally built atop an embankment 13 feet deep. Now, beneath said courtyard, archaeologists unearthed two stories of what was likely a four-story castle measuring 140 feet long and 55 feet wide, with defense mechanisms immediately adjacent, like a moat. Thankfully, the castle is not entirely shrouded in mystery. Historical records all but confirm the castle was Château de la Hermine, constructed by the Duke of Brittany in 1380, following the end of one of the many wars between French royals. It was part of a large public works program that doubled the size of the city of Vannes, but was abandoned by the duchy in favor of Nantes in 1470, before becoming ruins in the 17th century. The excavation was handled by INRAP, that's the National Institute for Archaeological Excavations in the state of France. A central passage connects the north gate built into the facade of the city side to another gate framed by two large towers that once made up a section of the city rampart overlooking the outer moat, all of which was identified on very old architectural plans of the city. And those have to have been wildly old architectural plans to have this building included. The team also came upon several staircases, including a well-preserved ceremonial staircase with a decorated core, several intact steps, and a sitting window. In the skeleton of the exterior masonry at each end of the house, the archaeologist also identified a set of latrines and drainage pipes that served the upper two floors. Per Yahoo, the excavation also uncovered a mill built into the residential parts of the castle in what INRAP dubbed, quote, a very original way, end quote. The mill was kept in a room inside a portion of the building that archaeologists called a square tower, which stood at one end of the structure along the moat that encircled the entire building. Just love the fact they have multiple moats at this building. That really speaks to the time. Most records of the mill haven't survived the last few centuries, go figure, but archaeologists did locate a space where a wheel was inserted into the device. The wheel was powered by water flowing through a canal that passed under the castle building, which was then released into the moat through a grated opening in the mill room. Pretty seemingly advanced tech there for a residential home at that point in time or that point in history. The team also found the remains of a bridge that would have stretched out over the moat and connected the castle to the outside world, an element that was obviously critical to allow castle residents to access the city, that per archaeologist. And across all the recovered masonry, the stones have been remarkably well maintained by the embrace of the wet earth, and in some places, they appear to have even been laid relatively recently. The drain pipes and latrines I referenced earlier were searched manually, but thanks to a lot of time having passed since they were last used, the workers only encountered soil and water to dig through. They also performed a deep bore into the former moat, and the two searches there yielded hundreds of varied artifacts. If you're curious what those were, cooking utensils, pots, pans, wooden crockery, jewelry, a selection of coins, padlocks, remains of furniture like cabinets and chairs, keys, pins, clothing fragments, remains of the water mill, shoe buckles, and to top it all off, graffiti-covered ceramic tiles, all found in that search. That's quite the haul, it would seem there, Reg.
Yeah, it's a wide variety of stuff to find. And I'm kind of curious, what is graffiti covered back in the 18th century? I mean, I'm assuming they didn't use spray paint.
Well, I would assume somebody found it since that time, okay. Covered it in graffiti, and there it lied for God knows how long since. But yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if there were 18th century hooligans out there messing with ceramic.
Probably.
Tiles. I don't know.
With paint and a paintbrush. We'll show them. Swipe up, swipe down, swipe up, swipe so, down.
What are you kids doing with that paintbrush? Get it out of here.
This, you know, this whole thing, it's interesting because we don't come across things like this in the U.S. It's just not old enough to have these types of structures. But, man, I'd have a hard time building something on top of something this well-preserved and this old. You know, it's too cool, but I also understand, hey, look, you're dealing with confined space, limited space there. You have to make use of what's available, where the city is. And unfortunately, in some cases, that means building right on top of some really old historical structures.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but for that city's new Museum of Fine Arts that they were planning on constructing, what's the plan for that now? Are they still continuing the construction? Is the castle going to be part of the museum? Are they going to move the museum somewhere else? I don't know if you know the answer to that.
No, I don't know the answer to that. But the fact that they knew going in there was a medieval structure beneath this hotel that currently exists tells me they're not going to alter the plans. I wouldn't assume so unless it's just, hey, this thing is way too well preserved to build on top of again. But I can't imagine that's the case. Like you kind of hinted at there, I think it'd be a great idea to somehow incorporate it into the city's fine arts museum. No, it's not art per se, but you could certainly argue that it's a moment in time from an architectural standpoint. So I think visitors would certainly appreciate being able to take a tour of that as part of all this.
Well, and maybe you could hang some specific art pieces that would kind of match the locale. That would be pretty cool in that area.
Reggie, a self-portrait.
Nobody wants to see that. That belongs in the dungeon.
They've yet to unearth the dungeons of this here structure.
A self-portrait by me would be a stick figure. I am horrible at drawing. I would get those circles to make it look like I had big muscles, though. You know, in the stick figure, you can draw some circles. That'd be my extent.
Boy, that'd really top it off. Well, it's not Weird Wednesday, but this story is still a little bit weird. Per Sky News, a tiny remote island off the coast of Sicily has begun the process of donating its 600 resident goats. Now, you're probably asking yourself, why? And the answer is, the animals are now overwhelming the human population of 100. Local Mayor Ricardo Gula told Sky News the goats were creating tension among the local community as they were wreaking havoc on the environment, storming people's homes, and eating their crops. I don't know why. I can't picture this, Reggie. I mean, they're goats. It strikes me as some sort of bad, cheesy B-horror movie where goats overrun the community.
I'm imagining them storming the homes. Like, eating the crops, I can see. But storming the homes, yeah, just like seemed kind of
a gang of goats? Like, you two go that way. I'll take the front. I'll take the back. This is our home now.
Kids, don't stay out too late. The goats are out. They're roaming the neighborhood.
Well, apparently it wasn't always this way. Gulo says it all started with a few goats supposedly escaping from their owner and going on to reproduce to a point where they're now too hard to manage. Per Gulo, quote, they represented a problem. You would meet them everywhere. 600 goats have been counted. The island is really small, so there really are too many, end quote. Okay, I find it hard to believe that a few goats escaped, using air quotes here, on this tiny little island where only 100 people live and the owner wasn't able to retrieve them before they could reproduce like wildfire. I mean, if they got away, I have to believe the owner wasn't too keen on retrieving them in this confined space.
Different lifestyle, more relaxed. You're not going to go out and find your goats immediately. You wait. You're like, oh, I forgot those goats. I'll get them tomorrow. Or, you just don't care. I mean, you know what? I get that they're trying to get rid of these goats, but why not have a lot of meat, I guess, for the next year on everyone on the island? Well, that's one way to get rid of them.
I guess. I don't know. Do a lot of people eat goats? Usually use milk, cheese, all that stuff that comes from them. But not sure about that. Photos show the goats grazing on what appears to be the residents' back gardens, and The mayor said measures have been taken to contain them following massive damage on the island, which is the smallest of the volcanic Aeolian archipelago in southern Italy. Again, per the mayor, quote, some goats are nice and robust, so some people are scared, while others fear they will enter their home, end quote. Again, are these like the meanest, biggest, baddest goats ever? I know that goats can be not all that savory at times. They can be difficult, but this really is... I don't know. It feels extreme. The plan to offer the goats to whoever seeks to breed them has so far been successful, with requests coming from as far as the central Italian region of Tuscany and Lombardy in the north of Italy. While the offer expires on April 10th, so get your offers in soon, there are no restrictions on who can apply for a goat or any limit on how many of the animals they can request. Reg, you want to submit?
We have our official Cool Stuff Ride Home goat that we have as a mascot.
Although I suppose we should be careful because it sounds like he might be quite the hooligan, as you mentioned earlier. Gloria, identified only by her first name, is the owner of the Golden Cafe Noir at Alessudi's Port. She told The Guardian there are just too many goats, with one of them recently visiting her business. While it attracted attention at first, Gloria was concerned the goat could turn aggressive towards one of her customers. I think that's a fair liability concern. You don't want to just have a wild animal in your place of business that could potentially get angry or upset or do something to harm a customer.
What about all this goat yoga that people do? People obviously aren't too afraid of goats in some circumstances, although those are usually baby goats, but still.
Yeah, I guess I don't have a ton of experience interacting with goats, but I never thought they were quite as mean as they're being depicted here. That's not to say they're all nice and cuddly, for sure, but I'm assuming we're not talking about like big horned sheep here. We're talking about rams of some sort. It's a goat like you would see on any farm. But yeah, look, I mean, in all seriousness, 600 is a lot. So I can understand there's reason to take action, but some of the descriptions feel a little over the top, pointing to how it may be a struggle to get the goats transferred from the top of the mountainous cone-shaped island. Gloria did question the logistics over their removal. Quote, how will they bring the goats back down? Perhaps they would need a helicopter to transfer two or three at a time. It's a nice proposal, but there is no logistical solution yet, end quote. So that last little tidbit may lend some insight into what I was questioning earlier about, hey, how do you lose a goat that wanders off on a relatively small island? I suppose if they're heading to elevation up a mountain, that could be reason enough to say, I'm not going up there to track this thing down or find.
Not worth the goat. They're like, I'll just take the loss of a goat. We're good. And then it gets out of hand. I'm curious, though, when people say they fear it'll enter their home, are these people not closing their doors? I mean, it's not like goats can do doorknobs.
Again, I'm picturing a goat with like a bandana on, some sunglasses, maybe a cigarette hanging out of its mouth, and storms into a home with three other goats. We live here now.
I have to agree with you. I mean, yes, I get the annoying. I get eating the gardens or crops that you might have. That is obviously a huge problem because goats will do that. As for being overly aggressive and people fearing them, I don't know. I guess anything in numbers can be frightful, but still seems odd.
Yeah, agreed. I don't want to be too dismissive of this because I'm not there and haven't seen the situation. It may be pretty frustrating. I'm sure it is. But again, still all in good fun here.
Taking a look at this day in history, it was on April 5th, 1923, that automobiles were changed significantly due to the tire. Until this date, tires that were used for vehicles weren't actually far off from tires used on bicycles, and they would need to be replaced every few hundred miles. Plus, they couldn't handle higher speeds or hold much weight. In fact, they were a thin rubber that also required high pressure, usually around 55 to 60 psi to even stay on the wheel, which also made them easy to puncture. However, that changed in 1923 when Firestone came out with the balloon tire, which they called the Firestone gum-dipped balloon tire. By the way, gum-dipping is a method of insulating tire cords against internal heat. Now, some of the changes that came with this balloon tire were that it had a wider cross-section and a larger volume of air compared to the previous tire designs. This increased air volume allowed for lower tire pressure, resulting in a smoother ride and better traction. Now, balloon tires also offered several advantages over traditional tires, including improved shock absorption, better stability, and increased carrying capacity. The wider footprint of the balloon tires also distributed the vehicle's weight more evenly, reducing wear and tear on the road surface. Balloon tires quickly gained popularity among automobile manufacturers and consumers due to their superior performance and comfort. They became standard equipment on many vehicles, contributing to the growth of the automotive industry in the 1920s and 30s. The adoption of balloon tires had a profound impact on automotive design. Car manufacturers began designing vehicles with a lower chassis and larger wheel wells to accommodate the larger tires. This led to the development of sleeker and more aerodynamic car designs. In fact, Henry Ford had to change the Model T and use the new design. The contract that Firestone had with Ford led to Firestone becoming the largest producer of automobile tires in the U.S. Firestone and other tire manufacturers continued to improve their design and performance of balloon tires over the years. Advances in tire technology, such as the use of synthetic rubber and steel belts, further enhanced the durability and longevity of the balloon tires. And I have to say, Marcus, those original tires only being able to go a couple hundred miles before you need to replace them. Could you imagine dealing with that nowadays?
Oh, it would be insane, but I think we have to remember vehicles weren't used in the manner that we use them today, given the speeds that they topped out at. And so how frequently were you in your vehicle and how long did it take for you to accumulate a few hundred miles? It would be a much longer period of time than it takes us today, because frankly, we can do that in a few hours if we're on a road trip.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just weird to think about. I mean, I never thought about the previous tire, but I can picture it now that I'm talking about it here. And it clearly didn't look like it did now. It looked more roundish. It did look more like a bicycle tire. I can picture it in my head right now. And yeah, it did seem like I guess, ineffective design, but obviously you have to start somewhere.
Well, I'll say this just in general, it's amazing how big of an impact the tire has on the ride of any modern vehicle. And I think people who know cars are well aware of that. But average Joes like myself sometimes forget those things because you take your car in, you get a new set of four put on, and the drive, the handling, everything immediately improves. And I guess in my head, intuitively, braking. I'm always going, yeah, braking. But I'm always thinking, oh, how big of a deal can it really be aside from some tread that might have a little bit better grip on the road? It is a big deal. It makes a massive difference, especially if you're driving in elements, in conditions. So this, for maybe as unexciting as it seems on the surface, is a pretty massive leap forward for the auto industry.
Well, the fact that it changed the design of the vehicle entirely, it shows the impact of this, what seems like should be a small change, but it was actually a huge change for the tire. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. I'm Reggie Rizzou. He's Marcus Path. Feel free to shoot us an email at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Also, like us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll be back with more cool stuff next week.